Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You never watch porn?
So I'm like a music gal.
What?
Hi, I'm Jamie Lynn Sigler.
And I'm Robert Eiler.
And this is our new podcast, Not Today, Pal.
And they found out that the chicken had a tumor and it was like pus. Not your favorite? They're going to ask us a question about Sopranos.
Let's split the difference and Jamie gets 1 point.
You have to rob his points. Like, why are you taking him away?
This is what he does. You have no idea what's about to happen.
I have no idea. I'm so excited, though. Available every Thursday, wherever you get podcasts.
This week on Dr. Drew After Dark.
You don't date Jews?
Fuck no.
Devastating.
Fuck no.
That sounded anti-Semitic.
Yeah, that's what I'd argue.
Dude, that's an attack.
It's Kanye's favorite producer.
It's and like you, Ethan's asking this question for me.
And you, oh, really?
I'm a bloody butthole brother.
Okay. BBB. B-E-N.
Welcome to Dr. Drew After Dark. Please be advised that Dr. Drew After Dark may contain sexually oriented content and be unsuitable for young children.
Hey everyone, welcome to Dr. After Dark, 818-253-1693 and drdrewafterdark@gmail.com for the voice messages and emails. The guest today, Jared Fried, stand-up comedian. He has got multiple podcasts that you know him from at least one of these, or perhaps his the comedy album, Always a Mama Bear. I love the idea of socially distanced. I didn't see it, but I'm going to. It's just the concept to me I like already. Yes.
Yeah, check it out. Yeah, I mean, it's a time capsule,
right?
I taped a special in New Year's Eve of 2021, like the New Year's Eve of that
year.
Yeah,
no, listen, I heard a comedian recently talk about the drive-in theater comedy shows. Remember that?
It feels 100 years ago.
It feels like we did that. That's insane.
Right.
How insane were we?
My parents were living in Florida. I was living in New York, so I had like two sides of the coin.
Yes,
you know, so I was dealing like. Visiting with them and staying for extended period of time, living in New York, knowing that like both places weren't as crazy as maybe the other place thought the other was. And, you know, reasonability went out the window during that time
completely.
And still to this day. And, and it's tough to make a name for yourself being reasonable. So I put out this, you know, it's like, now it's like out there. It's been out there now, you know, how many years now? It's weird that it's that long
yes.
ago. But it's all COVID material.
I'm interested in examining the mistakes we made so we don't fucking do that again.
Right. I don't even know if we can. I think like I've kind of lost faith in the emotional, intelligence of people. You know, like people are so emotionally
taken with
everything.
You,
and now people are angry still.
Yeah.
Still.
On both sides.
Oh, yeah. Everyone's angry.
Yeah.
Like everyone. I was like in the car ride here. It was crazy. And we all, you know, I think online, like on our online voices are really our inside voice, like our voices in our heads said out loud.
Yes.
And I was in the, because I think about myself. I put myself in the position. What would I say? I'm a loud ass. So, like, what would I say? And I'm in the Uber on the way here, and it's a female driver, and she's got a muffin, and she's having her water, and she's got a 12-ounce, bottle of water. We're midway through the trip. She opens the window. She takes the bottle, tosses it out the window.
We're in Texas, man.
What the fuck is going on?
Wow.
I was in shock.
Wow.
Not enough shock to say anything. I wasn't going to say.
Online immediately, though.
Immediately tweeted. But you know what I did, which is the weirdest part? She throws it out the window. I'm like, this is a crazy person. Because
yeah.
She's around my age. Like, she grew up with fucking Magic School Bus and shit. She's, and I literally put my seatbelt on.
Of course.
Like, I might not be safe. This is a person that's...
The shocking part to me is he didn't have a seatbelt on already. It's like,
I'm in an Uber in the back. You don't get hurt in the back of an Uber.
Oh, my God. So, first thing I do is put a seatbelt on with these wild people at the wheel.
But it was like, I'm not going to say anything. I am feeling something.
God. you're bringing something up that I never really have thought I've really spoken about, but I've had little conversations with myself about when I get in the Uber cars and I smell weed, like half the time.
Right.
And the other time they're twitchy and I'm thinking, oh, this guy's on meth. He's been doing this whole night. And proceed. I won't pay another $4 for an XL. Here's the asshole.
I texted my friend. I go, I just watched this Uber driver toss a plastic bottle of water.
Was it a regular Uber X or was it an XL or a?
Literally, my friend texted me. She's so my friend's a con. She goes, didn't go with the Uber Black, huh?
That's exactly.
I was like, you're right.
That's guilty.
It was $22 versus $86. I was like, I'm willing to like be with a crazy person for that.
That is the price of savings. That's it. Our life in their hands.
Right. I wasn't expecting to talk about this, but like, I just thought about like what we think we are versus who we are. You know, like I think I don't care about the planet. I do, but I say I do.
Yes.
Socially, I care.
Yes.
You know, when I see
you're like Bankman Fried caring.
What's that? Right.
You gave money because it's just what you do.
Yeah, right. Well, yeah, we care. I'm Tom's. You know, buy a shoe, get a shoe, but I'm going to be a billionaire. Right. You know, like, and it's like, you would think, hey, stop this Uber right now. We do not throw plastic bottles. Yeah. You know,
I'm outraged. It's stepping out of this car.
Right. No, but no. It's like, I got to get to this show. We got to be here. We start at 1, you know.
By the way, what did I get wrong about Bankman? What's his? I put Fried, I think, because of Jared.
Everyone was like, is it your cousin? Yeah,
it is Bankman Fried.
Bankman Fried.
Okay.
Yeah,
all right.
Yeah.
Oh, crazy.
Yeah.
All right, let me get through the podcast.
Oh, sorry.
JT Train podcast, the Bachelor podcast, always.
The J Train podcast.
What did I say? I
said G Train. JT Train.
Oh, no.
I put this is how you know I'm 38 and single. I got my logo sewn onto my hat. I have nothing else to spend money on.
I dig it.
I have no family.
Wait, Bachelor, You Up.
The You Up podcast, that's like the popular one.
Yeah,
I have to say, I'm a huge fan of yours.
Thank you.
A lot of what I have done is in the vein of Loveline.
I'm aware of that. That's why I'm aware of You Up. It's
right.
It's good. And we need that. We need people your age doing this kind of stuff because it's so different. It can't come from me.
Well, that was the thing that when people would, I didn't realize until you go pitch things, you know, and I think where you and Adam Carolla left off is kind of where we began. Mm-hmm. It's this intersection of technology and dating.
Yeah.
And you guys were doing, you know, the intersection of like, you know, medical and dating and relationship and sexual stuff. And this is more like it's a cousin to it. I believe.
Think of the history, right? So the reason I got started is we were in this epidemic called HIV.
Right.
And no one was talking to young people about it. And I had this opportunity. I was like, well, I'm going to talk about this. These people don't even have heard of it. We were just starting to call it AIDS. The causative agent at that point was called HTLV-3. It wasn't even called HIV yet.
Okay.
And the term safe sex hadn't
COVID
been coined yet.
COVID versus COVID-19 right. versus whatever
right.
the fuck, yeah.
Right. And so I was just like, we got to talk about this. And so that's where it started medically. The challenge for your age, the medical stuff is not so much the challenge, the technological stuff is the challenge.
And that was the thing, whenever someone asked, like, oh, you're a dating expert, I'm like, I'm not a dating expert.
There's no such thing.
No such thing.
Yeah.
Exactly. There's no such thing. I just say I am a product of timing, as you're saying. Like, when I was in college.
Of history, literally of history.
Right. Yeah. Facebook came out when I was in college.
Yeah.
Everyone's like, hey, we should go check out chicks on Facebook. So I know the guy side of things.
Yeah.
And then we get out of college. Online dating is for nerds, then it becomes not for nerds, then it becomes swiping apps, and it's Instagram, TikTok, Snapchat. What does it mean when he asks for my Snapchat handle and not my phone number? I am going through that
In
real time.
Yeah, it's interesting. I just became aware of how much people have gotten off websites and dating apps and into their social media sort of.
Oh, Instagram's the best dating app. You know, that's just the reality.
But that's new. It's
right.
Like 6 months old or a year old or something.
It keeps changing every day. And it's like, I am this, you know, I was single and then I was in a relationship for a long time and then I was out. Now I'm single again. And I'm going through this with the audience and I'm giving an
audience.
And as you know,
I dig it.
Over a podcast, over the radio, it's easier to be it's almost easier to be honest with people this way than it is. My own, like, I'm making mistakes every day.
Of course.
And then, like, trying to go through it. So, yeah, that's where You Up kind of came from with Betches, which is the huge, hilarious website and, you know, media company. And the Betches and I, we got together, and Jordana Abraham, who started Betches, her and I, like, or the male female kind of point of view on all this stuff. So,
and you have a bachelor thing too. Bachelor.
I bring it up
because I was in the Middle Eastern, you know, the Jordanian desert with Hannah Brown.
I watched the first episode. Yeah. I scream at the Bachelor on my Instagram. Okay. I make fun of it as it's going on.
Yeah.
In a way that I think is entertaining. It's like a Mystery Science Theater 3000 for The Bachelor. I was a Hannah fan. I loved her season.
She's great. You know, she wins. She survives the whole fucking thing. She is tough.
I watched the first episode as part of like a sponsorship thing with them.
Cool.
And I watched. It was great.
Well, I got sick of shit.
John and K plus eight. She was,
got really sick too. We were in side by side ICU beds.
Unbelievable.
In Jordan, Agaba, Jordan.
It was crazy guys went through that. What made you connected with, you were like, I want to see if I still got it.
Yeah. Me and Piazza and Scaramucci were sort of in that zone.
Yeah.
And more importantly, I was feeling physically kind of not good, and they called me. I'm like, come on. And then they kept coming, and I said, all right, let me see. And I started training, and I started feeling great. And I'm like, oh, maybe this is what I needed. I needed something like this. Yeah, to really, really push. And it was great, and I just missed a couple of things I should have been paying attention to, which I feel like such an idiot for.
It was a great experience.
We're all close friends from that group. Yeah.
You know who I love? Dwight Howard.
Amazing.
Loved him. Like,
he's an amazing guy.
He really came off great, even though they kind of tried to make him like he was too good for... I loved him.
He's a little eye roll. He's young. He's like a kid, you know?
Yeah.
And so he'd do a little eye rolly stuff when they'd come at them, and they didn't like that. But he was somebody you could rely on. I mean, he was in.
I love, there was a scene where he's in the toilet. And his
with Mel B.
That's
so good.
And his head's above it. And I was like, oh, this guy is great. It is a show like that that makes you like, oh, personalizes people.
You're peeing and shitting on a tin foil pan. and we did a lot of, it didn't come on, a lot of stuff didn't go on the air, of course. And we all were talking about that. Like the women all, they don't mind me talking about it because they've mentioned it publicly too. They all started cycling together.
Mm.
And so that whole show was going on. And then they're like, you guys, you're going to get a show here with nothing we can do about it.
Hilarious.
Here we go.
Oh, what? I mean, I'm sure you guys have bond for a lifetime.
With
The Bachelor, someone asked me if it's real. And I've talked to a lot of the contestants. And to that point, they all say we're in this little bubble that no one else can understand.
So go see the series, the scripted series, Unreal.
I've heard everyone does that to me.
But I'm telling you, if you watch the first 15 minutes, I could name for you each of the people that are on the production staff, who they're representing.
Right.
Because that is how they work behind the scenes all the time.
That's so funny.
But the people are experiencing something real.
Yes. Yeah. I do believe that. I think of The Bachelor.
It's a Stockholm syndrome. It's a full on. Same with us in the desert. We just give ourselves into it and you go and you're in.
Right. And I don't think people can understand. They want to believe it's fake.
No.
I think it's like professional wrestling. Like professional wrestling, you're doing the moves. You take the bumps.
Yeah.
You're going to get hurt. You're going to first kiss, first date, dumping, asking someone to marry you, all real things in a unreal environment.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. It's all manufactured. But your brain can only remember the manufactured part so long, and you start going, see, it's Stockholm syndrome. It's all a exercise in that. So where'd you grow up?
Outside of Boston, a town called Needham.
So I went to college in Western Massachusetts. So.
Where'd you go?
Amherst College. Yeah.
Okay. So I'm from Needham next to Newton, which is what Jews usually know.
No, and you'd hit Newton just on the Mass Pike out to Western Massachusetts.
Right.
You'd hit Needham.
Yeah.
And I love that part of the country. Back when I was there, it was sort of economically blighted, believe it or not. It's so vibrant now, yeah.
I mean, it was idyllic, you know? Like, it's like, you know, I grew up in the small town. Needham High, you know? Like, a lot of it, you know...
What happened?
I don't know.
What went wrong? Your parents are asking themselves this.
What the hell happened? No, they, you know, it's just, it's thinking back, it's almost like a different time. Like, the you know...
I liked my
childhood though.
Good.
Like, you know, I'm not like a, you know, you see some comics, they think they have to tell you their sad story. I don't have a sad story to tell.
Some.
Right.
Pretty much all of them.
Right.
That's why you became a podcaster, not just a comedian.
Right. I got into that because I could like speak openly. I Yeah, I kind of, my whole thing is just always, you know, I talk about my parents. I love hanging out with them. Yeah. You know, like
what do they do for a living?
They're like basically retired at this point.
But we're growing up.
My dad used to sell liquor, beer, wine, wholesale.
Good times.
And then he, yeah, so, and then he was doing nursing home stuff. And
nursing home stuff, like administering.
Administering, yeah. No, he didn't work. Yeah. He like wasn't cleaning bedpans. And then, yeah, he was.
He was a really serious businessman.
It was always family businesses. So you know, my family was always intertwined by business stuff.
Interesting.
So you have a lot of, you know, he had siblings and stuff, and you'd always kind of get a front row seat for madness a little bit.
Did some of them stay in the family businesses or everybody get out?
They all stayed till kind of recently, you know, so now my parents are in Boca, which is like a whole nother, you know, sitcom in itself, you know, like they moved down to Boca. They were going to do, you know, Snowbird. And then now they're like, they are the most Florida people. They love it. And they're like in a community, which is a bubble inside of the bubble of Florida. It is the problems of the problemless. It is so much fun for me to watch.
When you go down to Florida, the first thing you notice how particularly Southern Florida, how happy everybody is.
So happy.
Everyone's happy down there.
Even like the driving is easier.
Yeah. You know, everything.
Like, it's like the roads are wider.
I can breathe here. It's amazing.
You immediately, the amount I feel comfortable the minute I get there is like shocking to me. Like I love every second.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. It's kind of, I feel guilty.
It's so weird. Nice. Yeah. And it's weird.
When you live in New York, where in New York do you live?
West Village.
So that's a beautiful part of
the best. Yeah. I was living in Harlem, and then I moved in with the woman I was dating, and then we moved in together during the pandemic, broke up, and then I had like this COVID deal opportunity to like to move anywhere in the city I would like to go.
What? And I
was, because it was. All the prices were chopped.
Oh, wow.
There was room to go. People were looking for, you know, month off.
Right. Especially down sort of that area, they were bailing. People were bailing and moving out of the city.
In the West Village, I moved there, and within seconds, I was, again, another like, I am too comfortable here.
Yeah.
And, you know, walk to coffee places. And I'm near the Comedy Cellar, which is like kind of home to me. And I do stand up there. So I'm like, I'm really like pigging shit.
I'm trying to remember the coffee place I go to in the West Village all the time. Hang on a second. See if I can come up with it.
Is it fancy or not fancy?
Fancy.
The Elk.
No, it's sort of French.
I know that one, and it's kind of old French looking.
Yeah.
It's on Hudson.
I know exactly. I think so.
I can't say the name because I don't speak French.
No, it's not anyway. Hang on, sorry. I
went to the south of France last summer and had the worst time of my life. I went alone.
Where'd you go?
Saint-Tropez, Nice.
And you don't speak French?
Don't speak French. And single guy, single men shouldn't go to Europe. That's just my advice, my blanket advice.
Clooney, Cafe Clooney.
I know Cafe Clooney. Yeah. Well, that's a restaurant. That's been
it's
there
a
forever.
Restaurant too.
I know that place. I was thinking of a different place. But I went to France and hated my life. And
damn, learn French.
Well, No, I'm
going
to
I'm just saying.
I'm going to go to the English-speaking ones. I'm trying to fuck.
Well, at least you know, like, very different experience.
Yeah.
All right, so here's the deal. I'm glad you're here because you've cut your teeth well with your podcasting career.
Right.
To help me with some of these questions and things, and we'll try to start slow here.
I got to say, I'm such a fan. I have you and Carolla to kind of thank for getting into podcasting. I love talk radio my whole life, and I was selling life insurance and annuities.
Wow.
Downloading Carolla's podcast when it was a radio show, you would go on and do like, you know, like segments.
Yep.
I would download it in 15-minute increments onto my iPod Nano.
This is when he had the radio show before his podcast.
Before the podcast.
So this was his morning radio show.
Yes. And it was when podcasting, like they were just putting it on between commercials in little tiny bits. So in the morning before I'd leave or the night before, I'd download the day before's episode in like 15-minute increments.
So let me just quickly tell you a brief little radio story that hopefully will inspire you to appreciate how free you are doing podcasting.
Okay. As opposed
radio, you have layers of management on top and salespeople and this and that and rules and blah, 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 and timing and back announcing and commercial breaks and all that stuff. Adam would have some friends of his come on, comedians, and do segments once a week. And of course, the management was... No, Adam, come on. Why are you doing that? Because these are these are great comedians. They're funny right. comedians. They're dedicating their time. Finally, they call him in the office. I go, Adam, these three guys, no. The one guy, he brings in clips of like reality shows and stuff. And I don't even understand what he's doing. This guy, Joel McHale, okay. I don't understand. He's got to go. The second guy, he's just weird. I don't know why you think he's funny. This guy, you may have heard him, Zach Galifianakis.
Yeah, yeah.
Third guy, these guys are free on the radio. Third guy, they go, the third guy, this guy is radio death. This guy, Louis C.K., death. You got to get rid of these three guys. Can you believe that? That he had those three yeah. on rotation, because he knows good comedians. And the radio, like, no, these are not funny. And radio, this is a classic thing with radio. They would tell Adam he wasn't funny all the time, mm-hmm. too.
Just so, in what world? Like, that's the thing. That's the right. one thing you realize getting into doing this stuff is that how many people who don't do creative want to be considered creative. Like, they want to have their touch on it. So they want to say,
I hope you never get involved with people that create late night comedy, you know, all right. television comedy. They're some of the least funny people you'll meet.
Well, it's crazy that the sales guy's like, listen, let me give you a couple of tips when you're the one hearing an audience laugh and not laugh on a nightly basis. Like, you've been on stage with Adam. You guys have done live shows. You know what works right away. You know, half a second in.
That's right.
And these are the segments I would tune into. I'd be like, oh, this is a fun chop it up moment. And, you know, I go back to Boston listening to sports talk radio, WEI, like my whole
talk
life.
Talk radio
like,
is really quite a thing if you really appreciate it.
I loved it. It's what I listen to this day, every day. This is all to say I'm happy to be here.
Good.
It's
very glad exciting. To have you. Let's get I'm some calls in. This is Ben. You are here with myself and Jared Fried. Ben, what's up?
Hey, hello. I have a quick question. How's it going?
Hey, quite well. Thank you. What's up?
Yeah, so my wife is pregnant, and I'm hoping we have a boy. Mm-hmm. We still don't know the gender, but my question is, should I get him circumcised? I myself am not circumcised, and I had a terrible experience when I lost my virginity. And
what happened?
I know what it feels like.
What happened?
when I had sex for the first time, like I felt a sharp pain, like on the head of my penis, and actually got a tear.
Yeah, so
I did not know that.
And then it looked like a crime scene after that, right?
Yeah, it was terrible. I mean, I still had sex for like the whole 2 weeks. I didn't let it heal properly.
Of course.
But
well,
of
course.
And it was just terrible.
Yeah.
Can you repeat the story, but just whisper it in a sexy way? It was kind of hot. Sorry.
so what usually tears is the frenulum at the base. Okay. It's the thing under the penis that tears commonly. I personally, you're gonna show us here frenulum, but frenulum, you're gonna see the mouth. No, you want the frenulum of the.
Well, no, there's frenulums all over. Up
there, it is.
Oh, it does look like the bottom of the tongue. I'm happy you showed the mouth.
You're gonna literally have to put frenulum prepuce because you're gonna see a frenulum of the head. That's because that's a little more common.
But there's multiple frenulums.
Yeah, you have lots of frenulums in your body. Yeah.
It's funny that I was like, I don't know, but now when I see the mouth one, I'm like, yeah. Oh, this all makes sense.
Anything that's tacking something down is a frenulum, essentially. Right. He took it away from us. But the frenulum kind of tears. It happens a lot. And also you can get tears in the foreskin itself. And the real problem with that is that when it heals, it scars and the foreskin shrinks a little bit. And if that keeps happening.
Don't want shrinkage there.
If it keeps happening, the head of the penis eventually can't come out.
Oh my God!
Yeah, and it hurts and it re-tears, and it's just a freaking and it's a really common reason for adult circumcision.
You're Jewish, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because. What happened to me was like my head was actually only popping out about like 25% after the tear.
Yeah.
I was able to actually fully take it out.
Yeah,
so it actually helped me, but you know, obviously. I was a horny bastard at 15, and I didn't stop, you know, having sex.
I know. I mean, that's the problem with the man. That's the problem with male. He could be eroding his kneecaps off, right. His penis is...
He fought through. He's like, there's a willing woman.
I know.
I don't care how much my dick hurts. Yeah.
That is the male, man. Right. If ladies want to understand what motivates men, just talk to a 16-year-old male and see...
Pushing his penis through a broken frenulum or whatever.
Right. So... for me, you know, there's all this crazy world where people want their foreskin restored and all this nonsense, and I didn't.
Oh, mine's
consent
on my keychain.
I didn't consent to it. Did you actually make a keychain out of it, or is it just on your keychain?
It's the ring.
Yeah, nice. I think it's kind of silly. It's a medical question. It's an issue that if you have it done, they numb the baby. It doesn't hurt. It obviates all this stuff, which is really rather common. I wouldn't want to go through all this. Adult circumcision is a bigger deal. And there's been an international movement to increase the incidence of circumcision because circumcised penises are less likely to get HPV, less likely to transmit HPV, and same thing for HIV.
Also, your son's probably going to be lazy. It's one more thing to take care of.
Right, to clean.
To clean.
Yes.
This is the thing. Trust Jews. If Jews are doing it, always trust Jews. Like the idea, like you want a lawyer? What's the last name? You
accountant.
Want an accountant? What's the last name? My dad, I would go, who do you vote for in the election back when I was a kid? He goes, I just look at the Jewish names and I hit the Jewish name. I don't care what the hell they're doing. They're Jew. I gotta assume
that is very old school shit.
Right. For this, it's like I know. Like I think this is one of those that you go.
This is one of those areas. This is where you can.
Well, that was the thing when you deal with Orthodox people and you start hearing why they did certain things as far as kosher,
this was all to it was health related,
cleanliness.
Yeah. Well, it was all the kosher was the pigs had disease and trichuria and all this kind of stuff, and then cleanliness was another part of it.
Well, before when you eat, there's a whole prayer over washing your hands.
Yep.
And it was all like built in. It's almost like my mom growing up used to tell, I swallowed meconium in the womb.
So he's a shit eater. Yeah, he ate shit from the moment he came on this planet.
Exactly. I've been eating shit my whole life. I swallowed my own shit in the womb.
That's what happened.
And then I came, I couldn't breathe.
Yes.
And it was
very common. It's actually
very common. I guess I was very sick though from it. So I guess there was complications.
So you got pneumonia.
Something happened. I've been told my whole life, don't smoke cigarettes. Because you have tar in your lungs from when you were born.
You've injured your lung. You maybe have some scarring or something. But interesting that you started with, I have nothing wrong in my life. I don't know how I became a comedian.
Right.
Nothing ever happened to me.
Well, this is bullshit.
Major trauma on a ventilator as a kid for months.
That I don't remember that. You know, so
it leaves an imprint on your body.
That's why I'm here with Dr. Drew today.
Right.
So I remember my mom like just made up this whole cigarette thing. Oh, you can't because of the meconium.
She sort of did.
Right. She made that up. In the same way Jews made up a bunch of this shit. You know, to get people to wash their hands.
This
is actually a good thing.
So, you know, I had my kids circumcised. I'm glad I was circumcised, Ben. I don't know, you know, and I occasionally, you know, men are made fun of by female partners because they're not used to seeing that. There is nothing wrong with having a foreskin. Nothing.
It's like the commercial, but, you know, the commercial where that Barry Bonds is in? Not Barry Bonds, with Doug Flutie, and she'll like it too.
Like, well, and the other thing that people who are advocates of the foreskin will say is it makes things more sensitive. Excuse me, but every call I get here is guys are too sensitive.
Right.
And so the sensitivity thing, and it really doesn't make that much difference. So it's a question of infectious diseases, which internationally makes a big deal. It's avoiding the need for circumcision as a male because of narrowing.
If I was more sensitive, I'd be coming every time a woman shakes my hand. So I don't need it.
Interesting. Maybe more than I needed to know.
Sorry.
But Ben, does that help at all?
Yeah, no, that helps. And obviously my wife, she's giving me the go ahead on that decision because I had issues and I have my own worries. But
yeah, I think let those issues be your
good.
Let those be a guide to you because they're common problems, and I wouldn't want that.
It's actually cheaper if he does it with his son at the same time. They can get a 2-for-1 special.
Well, also, back to your dad's. Let's see. Oh, this is interesting. I don't know what you're going to do with this, but this is ironically Christian.
Oh, good.
Question.
Hey there, what's going on?
So basically, I have this I know it's a fetish or a kink, but it's like little people. I'll see them like on TikTok and stuff, and you know, it gets me rising and all. But I saw one like in real life the other day, and I got scared.
Oh, interesting. So there are people that are afraid of dwarves and small people. A lot of people have uncomfortable feelings around them, but it's interesting that fear is also connected to sexuality for him. So I'm guessing there's some crossed wiring. You know, when fetishes emerge, they're usually from some wire crossing early in life.
Interesting.
Some experience that gets confusingly sexual and overly intense, really. And some of it is actually the structures of the brain, like the feet area and the sexual arousal thing. These are very closely related.
Now, I know you go wide on what subjects you cover.
Yes, yes.
Do you feel as a doctor comfortable? Like you're like, this is in my...
Yes, yeah. This
right.
I've heard of this stuff for many, many years.
I'm sure. No. But I'm saying this is like... This is off the, you know, this is on the spectrum of things I expected to hear on this show.
Yeah,
you know?
Here you are.
Yeah, and so he's afraid and likes it.
Yeah, and so what I'm guessing, so it's sort of the thing you like watching on internet porn or something, right, Christian?
It's like if they pop up a lot on my feed, so they pop up, I'll give it I'll watch it, I'll like it, but I don't want to like it. You know?
Right, right. Mm. So are you kind of addicted to porn?
No, I'm not. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So let me. So yes. Is have you sort of gone up the food chain in terms of more and more and more sort of? You okay?
Oh yeah, for sure.
He walked by a little person.
Yes. Yes, I guess.
What just happened?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure, but I'm gonna sort of take him offline here for a second.
Is he okay?
Just that sometimes people, when they get to more and more and more intense visual stimuli, women do it sometimes too. It's just that they're just getting sort of burned out on routine images, and they need, just like an addict needs more and more and more stimulation, they get to things that are more and more problematic, and they don't like that they're doing it, but they still look at it anyway.
Now,
just blowing loads. That's what they're doing.
So this guy, where does the fear come from?
I think that is, I don't, you know, people have funny feelings about things that are non-normative, and those are primitive emotions. You know, I don't know why we have them evolved into us, but there's all kinds of stuff that we have to watch out for.
Right.
You know, anything different, particularly as it pertains to other humans, we have to like, oh, okay, that's, I don't know where that, just because we have those reactions doesn't mean we have to succumb to them, if that makes
sense. Right.
And there's a lot of weird stuff in our system that never made sense to me. It really starts with, from an evolutionary standpoint, the more we mix genetics, the better, the healthier we are. And yet we have a tendency to not do that, which is a sort of a weird evolutionary impulse. And then develop tribes around that where we're even more inbred. So I don't know. I don't know what
blame Jewish mothers
there,
for that.
There must be some.
Are they Jewish? That's every woman I have ever dated. What's her last name?
Oh, really? So your mom's all the way.
Oh, my God. Uh-oh. Yeah, she wants...
What's she doing in Needham?
Isn't it the worst?
I mean...
Oh, you got that too?
He counted us down in Hebrew. Yeah. What do you think?
Well, I didn't...
Yeah, my mom's devastated that I don't date Jews.
You don't date Jews?
Fuck no.
Devastated.
Fuck no. That sounded anti-Semitic.
Yeah, so I might argue.
Dude, that's an attack.
Right. It's Kanye's favorite producer.
This is Morgan. Hey, Morgan, what's going on there?
Hi, Dr. Drew. How's it going?
Good. What's up, Morgan?
Good. So currently I am taking, you know, the famous Mounjaro medication, the weight loss meds.
Right. So Mounjaro is Ambic.
You got to talk about
this. Okay, we will. Go ahead.
So I'm, you know, a little bit bigger, and I've been taking it for like 6 months, and I've lost about 30 pounds.
Good for you.
When do I need to go off of it? Is it something that I need to be on for forever? Or what are your opinions on that?
Yeah, I actually don't have a firm opinion. I don't like people using medicine or staying on medicine that doesn't have a clear medical indication. Now, if your weight is having medical consequences, then I'm for it. The question of how long is, I don't know, but anybody's answered that question meaningfully. I know a lot of people that go on for, you know, 6 months, a year, and there is a tendency for people to go back. And particularly in those first few weeks, what people will describe when they come off it is extreme hunger.
Wow.
Extreme hunger. And so you immediately start having to deal with that. And of course that, you know, the weight goes up. So if you do come off, you've got to have some sort of plan for not just dealing with that hunger, but also maintaining a healthy lifestyle going forward so you can keep this weight off. How much do you actually weigh, if you don't mind?
So now since I've lost 30 pounds, I weigh 250.
All right. So it's sort of clinically relevant weight loss, and you'd want to stay on it, certainly to get into a range that is not, you know, people aren't starting to worry about your health, your skin, and things like that.
Morgan, have you told people you're on it?
So that's a controversial question, because obviously the more I lose, people are going to ask. And I mean, it's I'm doing work, but it's not, I'm not doing like major work. So I don't want to lie to people, you know? So
why is
I
that? Wait,
really
hang on.
Wait
a minute.
So this is something I want to talk to you about.
People are guilty about taking this?
Oh, there's a whole social dynamic to this.
What?
As someone who has dealt with weight stuff my whole life, okay, it is a big part of my life.
Yeah.
It's all my family talks about, food, body, weight.
Awesome. This is the Jewish show.
This is the Jewish, you understand. Morgan, I asked that question because I'm like, I'm interested to find out, because there's this, we talked about Ozempic, my co-host and I, on You Up.
Yeah.
We were talking about, like, we're not sure what the allowable opinion is to have right now.
That's insane.
But do you know what I'm talking about?
I kind of do. I mean, it is a medical management for, yeah. I mean, if you need to lose 5 pounds, I don't think this is a great thing.
So my mom has been talking about it since she's heard about it.
Yeah.
She doesn't stop talking about it. Yeah. And she's in a, as I said, in a bubble inside a bubble.
Yes.
So now the whole community is talking about it.
Of course.
There's people on it. There's people off it.
Of course.
There's people they think are on it. Who's on it? Who's got the prescription? Who's paying out of pocket? You know, prescription, it's $11. Out of pocket, $980. So, and we don't know. Morally, are you taking, what I would wonder.
Morally?
Well, are you taking, what's it really for?
For diabetes.
Are you taking diabetes medication out of a diabetes patient's hands?
Oh,
is there a limited supply?
We
don't know. This is what these is where the questions come up, because
yeah, that's an interesting question, but believe me, the drug companies will step it up.
Sure. But are they going to overcharge now? Are they going to overcharge the diabetes people because they're getting my mom in Boca who wants to lose a few? You know, it is I think it's interesting. I just think it's interesting because
that part is interesting. And I would argue that the insurance companies, that's the insurance company's problem, not going to be the patient's problem.
Well,
and Medicare's problem.
Well, it becomes my problem when someone loses 50 pounds and they look at me and they go, "You got to drink more water." And I'm like, "You're a fucking drug addict. You're telling me to drink water? I'm struggling out here.
This is not about drug addiction.
No, I know, but I'm saying.
But that behavior that you were describing in the bubble, that's drug addict behavior.
Well, because they're all looking for scripts.
Well, they get it. I don't. What's going on? Why can we allow them to get it when I don't get
it?
But if
I could lose,
nonsense.
But
that's
the thing
childish
is,
too.
I'm just saying.
It's interesting. The 75-year-olds are into that.
Are you kidding me?
Crazy.
Everything's high school.
Yes.
You know. So like,
yes.
You know, Hollywood's high school.
This,
you know, the community. But I think Morgan, what she's going through right now, is very relatable to people. Is it? You know, if this was, it's posed as a diabetes medication.
Well,
but if you said, "Hey, my weight is a physical," as you said. For some people, their weight is mentally beyond them. Like, I do believe that. Like,
yeah, it's a medical problem.
Medical issue. So if this was, Ozempic was now called, you know, is for weight loss.
Yes, it will be.
That's what
they
I'm,
will
so
get
so
the
I'm
approval.
Wondering. Are we at the beginning of when
this
won't
now,
be?
Now doctors are using it so-called off-label. We're allowed to do anything we want with any medicine.
Anything.
Okay.
It's
on us. So they're using it off-label now, and guess what? It works. We have lots of medicines off-label that work. Drug companies can't promote things for off-label use. That's against the law.
When does that happen, you think?
When do they do that, or when do they stop doing that and get the approval?
When's the approval coming?
You know, it's interesting. Sometimes when there's so much money to be made without the approval, they just don't bother, right? So we'll see if they even bother. But if they do it, which they should, 3 to 5 years, 3 years, let's say.
You get into this like witch hunt type of thing. Like I'm watching the Masters. Phil Mickelson looks fantastic. And this is a guy dealt with weight stuff his whole life. He's looked the same way.
He's got rheumatoid arthritis or something too, right? Doesn't he or something crazy like that?
I don't know his medical.
Yeah.
I haven't done his physical.
All right.
But I will say, you go, well, because it seems as though people of means
are doing this. I have prescribed it. I've done it, and I would use it for diabetes also. And I've done it on a very, very limited basis for weight loss. And that's kind of seems like to me how it should be done.
Well, if I was getting ready, you know, like for me, I've been trying to lose 10 pounds my whole life. Okay. I would say if this was the magic pill that I can live my life without, it's been on my mind.
Yeah, I get it. We'd have to sit down and talk about it for a while.
Right.
You and I would sit down.
You would hope it was not a mental thing, right?
Because we'd have to talk about risk reward when the probability is you'll go right back.
That's the problem, and that's what I think Morgan's dealing
except
with.
Except Morgan is going to, what I'm telling her to do is right. get it so far down that you really have a running start on this thing.
Right.
And then you can really start to establish some new patterns, and you can do things like exercise, you know, more vigorously and stuff.
If I was to give her a suggestion, and I'm not a doctor,
I think
the mental aspect of losing weight is like way more than people give it credit for.
Of course.
And I think Noom is an app that like sponsors my podcast. I just love that they've admittedly it's all psychology shit.
Except I think I was just talking to somebody about Noom today. I think they're about to go into this other world with doctor-managed medicines and things.
Oh, really? Well,
so I just saw it as code for, here comes Ozempic. Here it comes.
Well, I will say, but I do like that they get you thinking, like you said, running
but
head
it's
start.
Both important. Like, right. And so that's what we're coaching Morgan up. So does any of this help for you? No.
It does, yeah. I get married in August, so I'm a little worried that if I have to get off of it, I'm going to gain weight back, and then my expensive dress will not fit anymore.
This is another element. I'm getting married in August, yeah. Morgan. You know, there's an element where you're
look. It might
you.
Not. It might not fit either way, though, right? If you stay on it, you might continue to lose weight, and then it doesn't fit. So I know these are, but these are sort of. What do they call them? You know, problems of success. You know,
luxury issues.
Yeah.
Well, I listen. I
Rob
live in
Henderson,
the land.
Rob Henderson. Do you read Rob Henderson?
Is what's that? Just,
he's a guy that talks about luxury beliefs.
Oh, I have a podcast that I call the Luxury Lounge.
Oh, so
where people
gotta,
can write in with their luxury problems.
This guy's a sociologist at Cambridge.
Oh, really? And
yeah. I made a social psychologist.
I love luxury issues.
Well, this is one of them.
All right.
And you know, You work with your doctor, just like I told Jared. If we were together, I'd sit down. We'd really talk about this, and you should have somebody that's working with you. And of course, as you're kind of alluding to, the weight comes back, but you can do stuff. But you need a running start. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Just don't tell your fiance. No,
the fact that people give you shit about it to me is disgusting.
If
anybody gives you shit for taking care of yourself, and by the way, taking your doctor's direction, that is disgusting. People have what goes on between a patient and a doctor is nobody's business.
Well, it's interesting.
It's nobody's business.
It's interesting. In my comments section, I put up a joke. I was like, I did the joke I just did with you. Like, if I don't tell me to drink a lot of water if you're on Ozempic. There has to be a level of honesty here.
Yeah.
And the comments from the mean people were especially weird and mean. It was like, you know, this idea of hard work. You know, they're going, you know, and it's like, I guess their thought is I'm in the gym. You're getting this magic wonder, and it's like that's not the case. That's an insane way to look at life, and
also
mean way, and
also humbly go fuck yourself.
Right,
mind
your
own business.
Right,
this really came through to me when everybody started freaking out of what Joe Rogan was doing with his doctor when he got COVID. It's none of your business.
Right.
And by the way, the things they freaked out about were sort of the least interesting or sort of outside the box treatments that his doctor gave him. Gave him you know, infusions of certain stuff that were kind of interesting, and using things. It's like, that's interesting. So good. That's the two of them making that decision. Nobody else should know about it or have an opinion about it.
Right. I guess their feedback would be he's on a platform where he talks about it and you're influencing in a certain way. I could understand.
Are
that
you?
That. I don't know. I am.
But this is a good topic because tell me if I'm wrong on this. I feel very strongly because I worked in a psych hospital for decades. And when you don't tell people things or don't give them access to things and they have a sense that there's something there they're not getting, it escalates everything bad. And it sends them into sources and rabbit holes that are not good. Bring it out. Bring it all out.
Right.
Put it all out there, and you can handle the truth. You can handle it. You can handle all of it. Just give them everything and then try to help them make the decision, because understand they're going to go – if somebody's going to go south in a paranoid fashion, it's going to be worse if you withhold information.
Well, I guess it goes back to what we were talking about with the water bottle out the window. It's like it's head thoughts versus what you say out loud.
Mm-hmm.
And this idea of personal responsibility, people get very in each other's space. – You know, what you're talking about is like someone can hear something, you know, do some problem, you know, problem solving, and they come to their own problem solving for the best of their life.
Yes.
The internet kind of creates this world where we're all like arm in arm and we think we have more of a, opinion on someone we're following, you know, with again, than we actually do.
And you
know?
Shouldn't be able to force somebody to do anything or hear anything. Or, well, that's insane.
I think there's a psychology to it as far as, and I have no psychology.
Like this tribal stuff?
Right. Yeah. I think it's like this idea that, you know, that the follower economy.
Mm-hmm.
So we live in the follower economy.
Okay.
So your follow is worth some amount of dollars to the person you follow.
Interesting.
And I think that trickles down into our psychology of like, well, I have a right to kind of weigh in on the person I'm following because I have given my follow.
Wow.
And because that's how money works right now. Like the idea that like there's no pass down tax for a celebrity whose kid gets a million followers just for being their kid. Like,
interesting.
You start getting into that world. Like, you know, there are, you know, IPs getting taken out in the name of children.
Yeah, no, this is your zone. This is stuff I don't think about.
Well, this is the only thing I think about.
Yeah.
It's like, I live in the follower economy. No one's ever cast me anything.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I was never, like, I made my own podcast where I said, please share and subscribe for years. I'm sitting there, please share and subscribe. So there is a psychology that goes along with it. And I think there's some people that don't want to admit to a like being payment, a share being payment. And then there's some people that's so entrenched
that they think
they have a actual say over the people they follow.
Right. So that for sure happens, mm-hmm. right? But I want to make sure, because this is new idea to me. If somebody is a follow, do you have some obligation in return other than just giving them a good product?
Well, I guess, you know, I don't think, and I do think that a follow feels more important than an unfollow.
Okay.
Because every person has the right to not buy something.
Like, right.
I don't believe in the idea of canceling to me doesn't really exist to me.
Because you build your own thing.
Right. Yeah. Well, goodbye. You don't like I'm having a party at my house and I'm playing music. And then I go to the next song. I love the next song. Someone goes, I hate this fucking song. I'd be like, we'll lead you out.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You can go. Hopefully someone new comes in for the next song.
But it feels like on the internet, people go, I'm going to force you to comply, to turn off that music.
Right. And
that's the problem.
That's the problem. And that's where you go, I think that's a big psychological, like, I feel my follow is giving this person a career. And I think when leaving the house doesn't feel as powerful. I think about this a lot.
None of that is good.
No,
it's not good.
Well, it used to be easier that, you know, like you get, I don't think I would think this way if I was hired by someone to do a job. Like you go do someone's TV show. You go, the show was good. I had a good time.
Yeah.
I left.
It's different. You're doing a good job for the host or the producers.
Right.
Not for the followers.
Right. And there's some people that, you know, they go to extremes. Again, reasonability doesn't win on the internet.
Mm.
Reasonability, you know, you retweet hate and love.
Well, and Anna, you said it's whatever's in your head comes out.
Right.
Which, so, you know, just basic social, you know, sort of human interaction prevents you from normally doing that.
Well, that's the thing. If I was at a party and the music started sucking,
yeah,
it was good before, started sucking, I would go, I'm going to get out of here.
It sucks, yeah. Or
I'm going to quietly leave. Yeah. You know, the person at the comedy show that goes, I'm leaving!
Yeah.
You're like, that's a crazy fucking person.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes, like. I totally agree. Ethan, what's going on there?
Hey, Dr. Drew. Hey, so I got a question about, as the women would say, buttholes.
Okay.
And so every now and then I'll wipe and I'll notice a tiny red spot of blood on the toilet paper.
Right.
I've checked my ass and I don't think I have any hemorrhoids, but what my concern is, if you're shitting at the same time and there's a little bit of blood down there, there's probably an open wound. Is that bad?
Ethan's asking this question for me.
And you, oh, really?
I'm a bloody butthole brother.
Okay. B-B-B. Yeah. So women, when we do some of our voice messages, when women call in with questions in this region, they always pronounce this word as bow. They leave the T out.
Butthole. Bow.
Bow. And they say it in a very way that I almost can't reproduce.
Ball.
Butthole.
Ball.
Butthole.
Butthole. That's interesting.
Yes.
That's
and it caught my ear early. And a lot of them do it that way. So is there ever blood mixed in with the stool?
I don't really know because I only really notice it as I'm wiping.
Okay.
So, like, there could have been some.
All right. Keep an eye out for that.
I don't ever know if it's in the water, though,
no. Right, right. So, as you've alluded to, that hemorrhoid in your age group would be the most common thing, but there's many other things that can do that. And so it's why what we call bright red blood on toilet paper is something that should be evaluated by a doctor.
Bright red blood?
Well, that's weak. It's not dark. You know, it's not venous blood. It looks red. It looks red.
Right. Why is that?
Well, any blood in the stool is sort of time to look, but bright red blood, BRB we call it, bright red blood per rectum, suggests certain things.
Okay.
While, you know, blood mixed in with the stool suggests other things, or lots of blood suggests other things, but just bright red blood on the toilet paper we call it. It's not really bright red blood. It's just red, red on the on the toilet paper. It's in the younger age group, it is most common hemorrhoids. It might be an internal hemorrhoid, which is why you don't see it, but there can be arterial venous malformations. There can be polyps. There can be fissures. There can be early Crohn's disease, things like that, inflammatory bowel disease. So you do kind of need somebody take it, look at it, make sure it's not something more.
I had this, and I went and got a colonoscopy at
a
young age.
That's to me, the ideal thing is a sigmoidoscopy or colonoscopy.
Yeah, it was weird.
I do want to get deep into your ass crack. Well, that's what that is. And so,
oh, yeah, they knock you out. I
have to get another, as long as we're having, this is the Jew show. Yeah. I have to get them every year.
Every year.
Because I have something called Lynch syndrome, which comes through my Ashkenazi side.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
What's that?
It's essentially, there's six versions of it. I'm what's called an MSH6,
okay,
which is an intermediate version. And it's varying degrees of DNA repair abnormalities. So cancer developed, your cells are always dividing, many of them are. And when they divide, there's a certain amount of, replicating DNA is an extremely complicated biology, and mistakes happen all the time. And you have a whole DNA repair system that comes in. And with Lynch, that system isn't so efficient.
Gotcha.
And so particularly cells that are dividing a lot, bowel, stomach, that you tend to get stuff there. And so you have to watch for it all the time.
I just remember I got a colonoscopy and I went to when I first started comedy, I didn't have like a doctor, you know? So I went to like my dad's doctor and I think she was like a teaching doctor.
Yes.
And she had,
so you had a bunch of people in the room with you?
One student.
That must have been
who
fun.
Who was my age.
Yeah,
and I remember being like, I got some blood in my stool. And she was like, she was kind of like watching over him as he went through the thing.
I was going to say, blood in the stool is such a classic and common thing. If I was teaching, I'd go ahead.
Right. and you could see this guy's like my age.
Yeah.
And we had this moment where I'm like making eye contact. And he's like, don't say it, man. I'm going to have to stick my finger up your ass. Like you could see, like, because before this conversation, he's like, you live in New York? I was like, yeah. He's like, I love this bar. I was like, I go to that bar all the time. Like, we could have hung out. And then, like, I was like, well, I got blood in my stool. And she's like,
here we go.
Here we go. Yeah. And it's like friendship ruined, you know? So.
And the thing is, though, the rectal exam is something you formally do. If you know it's going to colonoscopy, you might skip it.
Well, it was a first step. Yeah. They said this is worse than the colonoscopy.
Right, because you're asleep for the colonoscopy.
Right.
But the fact is, if somebody comes with bright red blood and they're willing to have a colonoscopy and you're worried about the family history or something, you would maybe do the rectal when they're asleep.
They were looking.
Unless they're looking for a reason. Because you know the patient has already told you there's blood. And one of the reasons you go in to see if there's a mass and to see if there's blood. And the patient's already telling you this.
Now
blood,
I just have to find a willing woman who will do it.
Whatever you're into, man. So Ethan, it is, you know, hopefully you won't need a colonoscopy. Any family history of colon cancer or any GI cancers?
Yes, my grandfather on my dad's side has had colon cancer. Mm-hmm. Also history of Crohn's disease there too.
Right. So this sort of makes it more important that you get this all properly evaluated. How old are you now?
I'm 28 now. I've only noticed it, you know, within the last like year.
I understand you're trying to make a case for not doing this. I like, this is the way men work. Like I didn't mean to mention it. It's just sort of a new problem. It's still, once it happens and you got to get it kind of checked out. That's all. So
get it done, Ethan.
And hopefully they'll just do a sigmoidoscopy and not a colonoscopy.
Come over to my house. I'll do it for you. It's okay.
Let's go to a couple of TikToks just so Ethan can get a sense of, what we do here at your mom's house.
What do?
We watch videos. Tom and Christina sent some over here. Oh my God.
Oh my God.
Was that a bear?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Why would she be hugging the bear like it was the snuggle
mascot?
Look
at that. I always love it when. Oh, oh my goodness. Oh, somebody laughing?
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Bear gonna bear.
I know what I'm saying. I love it when humans are amazed that wild animals right. behave like what they are. Wow.
Right. Oof, but yeah, I will in her defense. Tough, right? What's that?
Bitches are tough. Right? Oh,
yeah, you're right. In her defense, it was the cutest looking bear I've ever
cute.
Seen.
It was cute. I understand the allure, but
it is one of those things where you're like, oh, it looks just like the doll I had growing up.
I know, it's lucky you didn't get her in the throat or the nose.
I mean,
oh my
she's going to need a chin replacement.
Yes, I know. But that's easier than a carotid artery replacement.
But it is funny that, like, I don't think of bears biting. Like, you think of a dog biting, and then you see the bear bite, and you go, oh, they bite too. Yes, they like, do. I should have known that.
Yes, they do. Put your face up to that animal.
How the fuck did you think a bear ate, Jared, you know?
Chimpanzees bite, for God's sakes. All right, what else you got?
See the pizza in front of you, but do you ever miss the six-pack when you blow up between fights?
I'd rather be fat and happy than ripped. And like, these people who are ripped all year round aren't happy. I'm not arsed. I don't care what they say. This six-pack's sound. I look great, but I'd rather be fat and happy, lad.
I like his attitude. I would say to him, do not put that opinion online. You will get feedback from the ripped community. Angry. I once tweeted something very similar to this where it was like, I was like, people who have abs are out of their minds. They count to 10 every day, 700 times a day. I'd rather be what I am. And they're like, oh, another. And it got on like workout Twitter and it became this like, you don't work hard enough, Ozempic asshole.
Oh my
thing.
God.
So like, I appreciate.
So this is weird to me. I can't get my head around people having these kinds of opinions about other people's behavior. So wonder free speech and things like that are being limited.
Well, they get so mad because what you're saying, you know,
why do you have any reaction to what other people do?
I think this is a millennial thing too.
Clearly.
Millennials want to be correct. We want to be right about our choices. So anyone saying, I'm not having a baby. Well, you must be saying, fuck people who have babies.
Oh, my God.
This is I only bring this up because we're in Austin, Texas. Ugh. Austin, Texas is the millennial embassy. This town was built for millennials, by millennials. Every time wherever I hang out, I'm extremely comfortable here. Like, there's chargers in the bar.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like, this is a very millennial place. But when you meet millennials who have moved here, they are obsessed with letting you know they made the right decision to move to Austin.
Right.
So they go, no, I love it. It's almost too much. It's like, I'm not your dad. I don't give a fuck that you moved to Austin. Like, I believe you. I'm sure it's okay. But like, it does seem like the people who moved here weren't happy wherever they were before. I don't believe anyone moved here because they were happy at home.
Well, of course.
Right.
Most are Californians. Right. They were happy to get out of here.
And
they were
like unsuccessful in California. And then they came here. They're like, oh, it's everyone else's fault. It's because the street wasn't paved.
Right.
So I got to go to Austin, land of millennials that I can lie to.
Well, to your point about wanting to be right all the time, that just sounds so exhausting.
Oh, it's horrific. I see it in myself. Ugh. The only reason I bring it up is like, I see it in myself. Like this debate of like city suburbs right now. I'm 38. You have these people that are my age who have moved to the suburbs, which I'm like, I'm from the suburbs. Good for them. But you see when they go, how's New York? Is it crazy? They turn New York into this lawless hellscape. And you're like, New York is fine. And they're like, oh, but the rats and the subways. And you're like, I haven't noticed. and you see this everywhere I go. When I remember being in Milwaukee and the club, the Milwaukee Improv is in this like nice mall town outside of Milwaukee. I stayed in Milwaukee. I had a blast. I love the bars there were cool. They had these tiki bars. They did Bloody Marys, like the crazy.
Milwaukee's become like a mini Chicago kind of thing.
I loved everything about Milwaukee. But then you'd go to this mall outside and it was a very much of like, oh, we don't go in there. But they had a lot of opinions on what went on in there. So it says I need to be right that I'm a suburban person.
So what do we do about this?
I don't know. We're fucked. It's over.
My instinct would be to push back hard.
Right. I don't feel the need to defend New York City. Don't come. We don't need you.
Well, you know what's interesting? I'm just now reflecting on something that my friends that work daily in recovery and in drug treatment, they were getting a lot of this from the 20-year-old patients.
Yeah.
But it's like, I don't think that's right. I think you should be. And finally, my Bob Forrest, the guy with the hat and the glasses, started saying, I don't give a fuck what you're a fucking drug addict here for treatment. Right. I don't give a fuck what your opinion is.
Right.
Shut up. Listen to what we're telling you. They didn't deal with that very well.
No, I'm sure they didn't. So, well, I think it's this insecurity. I think it's an insecurity. Our lives, you know, when you're told your whole life during a boon economy that you're going to be the president and you're going to be, everyone's going to do well, just go to college, get the grades, you'll get out, you'll make your million, just like you're going to be the first generation to do financially worse than the one that came before them. So I think a lot of that comes from the insecurity of, I am very publicly failing in comparison to the generation that I was brought up by. And I think a lot of that relates to it. I think that's a very, like, a way deeper way to think about it than most people want to think about it.
It's interesting. I know in other countries where economies kind of go downhill, people start to define themselves by sort of their what they intellectually know or what their skills are, mm-hmm. things like that, where they still have something profound to offer,
right.
as opposed to my opinion,
well,
which doesn't mean shit.
Japan lie flat. Japan, the our economy has kind of tracked Japan's.
Yeah, a little bit.
To go to service economy from industrialized. So you look at, they have this whole thing to lie flat. The kids are not moving out of the house.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So if you look at Japan, they're kind of like, fuck it. You know, I'd rather not try than fail. You know, it fail at a game that maybe there's no game to be won.
But that at least makes me feel optimistic about our situation.
Right. At least they know they're a fucking failure.
Well, they're trying. Yeah. So that's good. You want it, you're angry that you can't, and that means you're sort of trying. So that's good.
Yeah, it's
frustrating.
It is frustrating. I call these areas millennial comforters. Like, I just feel so comfy, cozy, and I'm at
talking,
like,
about Austin.
Austin. Yeah. There's a version of it in every city now.
And by the way, well, let's flip this around a little bit and give millennials some cred. It's a great town.
No, great quality
of life.
Again, I love it.
And by the way, comedians I've noticed are starting to get a little more honest. I've wondered where the comedians have been for the last 3 years. Like, where are you guys? And now they're Chappelle led them on in.
Right.
And they're coming. And this is where I hear it is in this town. And the millennials are accepting it.
Well,
they
feel a little bit more free here because now there's a comedy world here. You know, I think that they're probably encouraged by other comics to push the envelope.
I don't mean just the millennial comics. I mean the audience.
I think people are tired.
I'm tired of just having this conversation.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, not because of you, because thinking about all this is like, ugh.
Well, there's just new layers to unpack that are actually interesting. Like, I said it last night on stage. I was like, I love it. In the same way my parents love Maggiano's. Maggiano's is my parents' generation. Big plates, big servings, big family style. My generation looks at Maggiano's and goes, look at that fucking garbage.
Yes.
You know, we want personalized tapas, no commitment.
Locally grown.
Locally grown, right? We don't want big factory, cheesecake factory, it's generational. You know, there's some towns that are...
So what's gonna come out of this? I feel like I have this faith that something good's going to come out of it.
I don't know. I hope.
I feel like the first order of business is getting the relationships in order, because millennials have been... Their relationships have not been great.
Right. I hope I don't know if social media is not the help.
Maybe that's the realization. Like
getting tired of it, maybe.
Tired of it or burned out on it or something.
I mean, I see that myself where I'm like, I've seen this already. I've played this game. You know, TikTok.
But that's how people are meeting still, is through Instagram, right?
Yeah, because you kind of have a resume in front of you. Like, I talk about...
But that's
about,
okay, right?
That's okay. I'd rather, like, people talk about, how do I slide into the DMs? I my advice is always give someone as much information as you've been given yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
So a lot of, like, you know, DMs, like, if you met someone, you get their Instagram account, hey, I came across your account because I saw your picture because you were with my friend. I know it's a little weird. Like, let them know, you know, this is like out of turn, but yes. I'd love to get drinks with you sometime. If they can't look at your pictures from your profile, what can you expect?
Yeah.
Because your pictures aren't just looks. It's
the stories.
Who do you hang out with? Do you have friends? What type of pictures do you like to put up? Are they highly curated? Are they manicured? Are they just you? Is it just you having dinner? Like, and again, what works for some doesn't work for others. There's no such thing as right or wrong in that. It's just you.
Oh, my goodness.
You have kids. How old are your kids?
They're 30. I have triplets.
Triplets, right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Are they
single?
Everybody's single. One's got a committed relationship. And, well, another one, the two of them are like with partners now.
Okay. How did they meet?
One was a dating app,
okay,
and the other I don't really know. I haven't asked.
Instagram.
Probably.
That's probably.
Probably.
And the other, are they on dating apps or are they?
Is the third?
Yeah.
He's not been right now. He's been very, very against it.
Okay.
But he's going to go. He wants. He was just saying lately he's got to find another way to meet people because
right.
It's really hard.
It is hard. I mean, like, people want to believe in this nirvana, this kind of this fake world of meeting people in person. It's not, I mean, you're just going to get less. You know, it's like sugar versus sweet and low.
Yeah.
You know, sweet and low is the dating app. You can get high octane sugar right in your veins. You get a lot of matches, a lot of conversations. You know, meeting in person is more like sugar. It doesn't, you put that in your coffee, you go, what the fuck? How much do I have to put in to make it work?
Oh boy.
You know, you got to, it's hard to meet people in person.
You got to put a lot in.
I told you, Saint Tropez, I
would argue stay in person. Maybe people need to make a discipline of that too, in addition to, we've talked about diet, like, exercise and stuff. Maybe discipline is like, I got to get off the internet into in person as much as possible.
Well, that's advice.
That's a skill.
That's advice I could use. I mean, that's the problem with the internet dating. I've been saying this a lot, is just, internet dating lets a nerd be a stud.
Yeah.
To go out into a bar and talk to a woman,
yeah,
that's hard. Yeah. You know, like, that's not an easy thing. And
you
I
mean
noticed,
to meet someone cold?
Cold. Just, yeah,
I
hey, nice
to
meet. Right. The dating app lets you be the stud that you wish you were.
But I think that part is an efficiency that's good. But you got to get it immediately off into the real space.
Right. Because I do this thing where I, like, judge the person by what, you know, like, again, back to millennial and generational. Mm. We look up the menu before we go.
Yes.
You make sure the restaurant is as safe as humanly possible. And now I do that with people.
Well, but take more risk then. That's a note.
Right.
Take more risk.
Right. And because I'll look at someone.
And stay out of other people's business. Right. Mind your own business.
Right. Well, you can. It's hard not to.
Resist it. Mind your own business. So those are the two things I've learned from here. Take risk. Get out in the real space. Mind your own damn business.
That's right. And make sure you get your blood and your stool checked once a year.
There's that. And prepare for colonoscopy. But I could talk to you about this stuff all day because I don't have your perspective on it.
Your kids are going through it.
I know they are.
They're 30. They're around my generation.
And I'm really, really interested in it. And I feel at once sort of angry and so sympathetic for what you guys are challenged with.
The comparison game is huge.
And the anger is more sort of what you're being subjected to and where it goes. And all the judgy stuff is just, ugh.
But that's why I really do believe that's why comedy is so, like, popular right now. Like, people are looking
at the one place. People can talk.
And then go, oh, I'm not crazy. Like, you know, I think comedy is finding the person on the plane who eye rolls the person acting out.
Yeah.
You know how comforted you are when someone's, like, yelling about their bag, and then you look at someone and they go, look at that idiot. And you go, thank you fucking God.
Yes.
I think that's a comedy club.
Well, good. Let's let it be so. Because it used to be rock and roll bands. They would sort of announce the movements, you know, you can move with them in that direction.
And now our rock and roll stars, Taylor Swift, is the Capital One mascot.
Yeah, exactly. Well, listen, if people want more, they need to go to your podcast. So tell them where they can find them. You Up would be more of this stuff,
right? Yeah, the You Up podcast. If you're calling in to Dr. Drew, this is a great compliment to this show.
Yeah.
I, again, huge fan. I love being here. I'm so excited. You Up podcast. And yeah, I'm on Instagram. It's kind of the hub of my wheel, at Jared Fried. I put up all my stuff. Love is Blind. I did a recap. I never shut the fuck up. I'm sorry if I haven't.
You never shut the fuck up.
I'm sorry.
That's why you're
I never
here.
Shut the fuck up.
That's why you're here.
Some people think that's a good podcast guest. Some people
Mom,
are like,
you were right. He never shut the fuck up.
Get him the fuck out of here. So, no, at Jared Fried, Instagram, and the You Up podcast. And then we do You Up Live. We actually do a live version of the show where we give dating app makeovers, we play Red Flag Deal Breaker, we bring people up on stage to do a deal reveal where we show the text messages and kind of translate them.
Where is that, New York?
New York, Chicago, Boston, D.C., Philly. That's where we're going.
Great.
We've done L.A., we've done them all. The show is a blast.
I'd love to be a guest on a show like that.
We would love to have you, because we got a lot of wackos that come on stage. So.
I bet. All right, my friend, good to have you. Glad you were here, and we'll see everyone else next time.
All conversations and information exchanged during participation of the Dr. Drew After Dark podcast or interaction on the DrDrew.com website is intended for educational and entertainment purposes only. Do not confuse this with treatment or physician medical advice or direction per se. You must always follow your medical professional's advice and direction. Nothing on these podcasts or posted on this site supplements or supersedes the relationship and direction of your medical caretakers. Please understand, I am not playing the role of physician in this environment per se. I'm educating. I am a licensed physician with specialty boards in American Board of Internal Medicine and American Board of Addiction Medicine.